When Billy Lee was ready to call it a night, I'd sanded several pieces of wood. Some short, some narrow, some long, some wide. I didn't know how it would all fit together, but Billy Lee was the magician. I barely qualified to be in the show. He inspected my work. "You did a good job. I'll hire you to work any evening you want to come out here." "Hire me? I'm just privileged to learn from the master. I should be paying you." He grinned. I pulled off the mask and laid it aside. "You are a genius with wood. Where all have you sold your work?"
"Far and near," he said.
"Okay, details. Where is the most impressive place one of your pieces of furniture sits right now?"
"Your bedroom."
"I'm serious."
"Okay, I made a dining room table to seat 20 and chairs to match for the governor's mansion in Oklahoma City," he said.
"I'm surprised it's not in the White House. If the president ever comes to visit Oklahoma and sees it, I'm sure he'll order one. Want a glass of iced tea? There's a pitcher already made in the refrigerator."
"No, I think I just want a long bath and a good night's sleep," he said.
"Well then, good night," I said.
"Good night, Trudy,"
he said softly. I thought of him taking a long bath while I did the same, and even though I was literally tired to the bone, both mentally and physically, it took a very long time before I went to sleep. Chapter 13. A warm breeze rattled the wind chimes and added to the chorus of crickets and tree frogs. I wasn't complaining. It was the last week of July, and we had a breeze, even if it was a hot one. The outside of the house was painted a buttery yellow. With the white gingerbread trim and new windows, it looked like a Thomas Kincaid picture. Billy Lee had made and hung a new porch swing on the east wing of the porch, back in the shadows of a mimosa tree. I enjoyed the swaying motion with my left knee drawn up, and my right foot hanging close enough to the porch floor that I could push off and keep the swing moving. The sun had fallen behind the treetops, and the last light of day filtered through summer leaves in fading rays. I loved sunsets and sunrises more and more, especially when doubts crept up. Most days I could keep them at bay. On others, it was like being at the starting gate at a horse race. One moment the doubts were behind bars, the next they were running full speed ahead. That night, I worried. How many more sunsets would I enjoy before I was diagnosed with Alzheimer's? Would I be in the nursing home when I was 65 years old? Billy Lee had said that we'd cross that bridge if we ever came to it, but he was my dearest friend. I could never burden him. Then there were those other two more pressing matters. Number one, whether or not to go back to work in 2 weeks. If I was going to quit my job as a teacher's aide, then I should resign in time for the school administration to find a replacement. I thought about the pros and cons. I didn't need the money, and we weren't finished remodeling. Lately, I'd been going out to the shop with Billy Lee in the evenings and working until dark. The equipment and all that power terrified me. I didn't even like the sander. But I enjoyed finish work. Staining especially. Billy Lee used a spray gun to apply the sanding sealer and coats of varnish, but staining was done by hand, using a paintbrush and wiping rags. I loved the way the grain popped right out, every knothole and swirl coming to life when color was applied. I pushed off with my foot again and contemplated going inside where it was cool. When I'd first moved into the house, I could hardly wait for the air conditioning to be installed. And here I was, sitting out in the hot night air, sweat beating up under my lip and on the back of my neck, trying to think my way out of my problems. Without reaching a firm decision about school, my thoughts went to my other big concern, Crystal. It had been longer than I'd ever gone without talking to my child. When she was young and every other word was mama,
I would have gladly been Gussie or even Minnie Mouse if I didn't have to hear a 3-year-old whining, "Mama," again. Now, I'd love to hear her say that one word. Should I make the first move and reach out to her? Or should I wait? If she needed me, she had the phone number. But in motherhood, there's always a butt or two lying around in the wings. I should be the one calling the shots. A dark-colored pickup slowed down and turned the corner, coming to a stop in my driveway. I figured someone had turned at the wrong corner and was using my driveway to turn around. The engine stopped, and the door opened. That got my attention, and I recognized Drew the moment he stepped out of the truck. Squared shoulders, belly sucked in, chin up. He wore confidence as casually as his dark pleated slacks and a white long-sleeved, lightly starched shirt. An evening breeze carried the smell of expensive shaving lotion across the porch as he shook the legs of his trousers down and rang the doorbell. My heart caught in my throat. Something was wrong with Crystal. She'd had a car wreck and was dying, or already dead. That was the only reason Drew Williams would set foot on my property again after the stunt with his car. He rang the bell a second time, waited a moment, and rang it again. When I didn't answer, he knocked hard and long. "I'm around here." I finally got words to come out of my mouth. "Where?" he called out. "Side porch." He strolled around the porch and sat down beside me without an invitation. He didn't look too shook up, so maybe our daughter wasn't hooked up to every known medical device in an intensive care unit. He slid a look from my dangling foot up to my hair. "Good evening, Trudy." Wonder how he liked the jeans, cut off just below my knees and frayed at the hems. I hadn't had time to hem them. I had a house to work on, furniture to stain, a mother in the nursing home, a child who wasn't speaking to me, and decisions to make. If he didn't like my jeans, he could take his charisma and go visit with the devil about it. "Drew?"
"I've come to ask you nicely to come home where you belong, Trudy."
If that didn't beat all, Drew Williams asking me to come back to him and saying it was where I belonged. Had Charity found someone younger with even more money? Or did he like cut-off jeans with paint splotches these days? And to think of all the lovely lingerie I'd bought through the years. He laid a hand on my knee.
"Well?"
I picked up his hand and dropped it. He sighed and looked out across the yard.
"Okay, I was wrong. I've been a fool. But I don't like coming home to an empty house in the evenings. I miss supper being ready. I miss everything you did to keep a home together."
Not a single endearment. He missed having toilet paper on the roller and pot roast on the table. I couldn't remember the last time Drew had told me he loved me. I think he'd said the words when we were dating. But sitting there beside him, I wasn't sure he had actually said those 3 words, even then. He threw an arm across the back of the swing, but was careful not to touch me.
"What do you say? Let's call a truce. I'll forgive you for the car. I'll forgive you for taking my money. We can sell this property and reclaim most of it. You've done a pretty good job of making this old place decent, so it should bring a fair amount. We'll put it back into the savings account."
Still, he didn't mention loving me or apologize for all the misery and embarrassment he'd put me through. I was being offered my old car that no doubt still smelled faintly of sardines, and Charity got one of those new Thunderbirds.
"I've got a bottle of wine in my new truck. We'll celebrate tonight. Go lock up the house and come with me. Your clothes are still in the house. I'll move them back into your closet if you'll come home. Please, Trudy."
"Back into my closet?" I whispered. Were Charity's short skirts and skinny little size extra small shirts on my hangers?
Were her red satin thongs folded neatly in my underwear drawer? The drawer would be offended if my Hanes Herway white cotton briefs were put back in there after it had known such tasty little treats. I just couldn't do that to a perfectly good dresser drawer. No, thank you, I said, loud and clear. His tone changed. Don't play hard to get. I know I made a mistake or two, but you were so busy with Crystal and your own life. I just wanted someone to make me feel special. I'm past that now. So now it was my fault. I'd spent too much time with our child. He hadn't felt special. Poor baby. Bless his heart. Marriage is built on trust and respect. And when that's gone, it's like sticking dynamite under the foundation of a house and expecting it to go on standing. I could never trust you again. Every time you got a phone call, I'd be wondering if you were setting up a date. Every time you said you had to stay overnight on a trip, it would be in the back of my mind that you were with another woman. So, no thanks. I'm not interested. You are a fool, Trudy. His voice took on a sharper edge. I can be a happy fool for not living with you, or a miserable one for living with you. I'll take happy. He jumped up and folded his arms across his chest. I gave you a place in society. Give it to charity. I don't want it anymore. It takes me a while sometimes to get the big picture, but when I do, it's an amazing revelation. Drew was in a bind, and I was the only way out of it. It must be serious for him to arrive all dressed up, freshly shaven, smelling good, and with wine waiting. She wants to get married, doesn't she? I guessed. I provided the firewall between you and your young toys, didn't I? You couldn't leave poor old dumb Trudy, so you were protected from all those young twits. Now I'm gone, and you are in hot water, aren't you? He jerked his head around to glare at me. So what's the price? I can't marry that girl. She'll ruin me financially. Give me a ballpark figure of what you want. Price? As in money? Or cars or a new house or you name it, Trudy. What if I said absolute celibacy? What are you talking about? Me or you? Both. You are crazy. You can have your own room, your own bed, and whatever else it'll cost me to get you back home. But I won't. Oops, he'd gone too far. And he knew it the minute the words left his mouth. I wouldn't ask it of you, Drew. You need a good, stable woman. But I'm not that woman. Not anymore. It'll cost you, he said. Oh? I'll turn Crystal against you. I've already started. You either take us both, or you don't get her. She'll hate you. I raised my voice. Don't threaten me. Hey, Trudy. Billy Lee pushed back the hedge and headed straight for the porch. His timing was perfect. I thought about kissing him right in front of Drew. Over here, Billy Lee. In the swing. Drew completely ignored Billy Lee when he passed on the steps. You've got until tomorrow morning. Think it over. Drew threw over his shoulder when he reached the truck. I've thought about it. The answer is no, forever. Strangely, I wasn't even angry. Got any sweet tea made up? Billy Lee sat on the porch, bracing his back up against the house and stretching his legs out in front of him. Sawdust clung to his hair and clothing, and he smelled like wood shavings. He needed a shave, and the way his shoulders sloped, I could tell he was tired. But he was handsome beyond words and smelled like heaven to me. Yes, I do. I'll get us a couple of glasses. I could use one, too. He followed me into the house.
The floor man called me a while ago. Said he had a cancellation and can get to the office and guest room tomorrow if we want.
Guess I'd better reserve a room out at the Western Inn, I thought aloud.
Well, if you want to catch up on some rest, that would be fine. But I was thinking maybe a little two-night jaunt somewhere would be nice for some of that rest and recuperation stuff. You up for another trip?
Billy Lee hadn't even mentioned Drew. Plain old curiosity would have prompted a couple of questions about why he'd been there.
Sure.
Where are we going, and what kind of clothes do I need to pack? He drank deeply of the tea I set in front of him.
Well, just how tightly can you pack a small bag?
How little of a bag are we talking about?
If we leave tomorrow morning and you wear jeans and a t-shirt, and maybe wrap an overshirt around your waist and tie the arms in front, could you make it with just the bare necessities?
But why would I need to take so little?
Thought we might go on the motorcycle.
My heart skipped a beat. Then I can pack in a grocery sack.
Duffel bag will be fine. I've got an extra one if you need it. We'll take the back roads down to Nakona, Texas, and prowl around in that area for a couple of days.
That sounds wonderful. Billy Lee, I've got a decision to make, and I need the help of a good friend, if you don't mind listening. A smile twitched the corners of his mouth.
You calling me a friend?
Guess I am. You got a problem with being my friend?
I wouldn't blame you if you did. It comes with a lot of baggage. I'll take the baggage. I've got baggage too, you know.
My heart felt lighter than it had in a long time. Oh, yeah? What's your baggage? I bet mine is heavier.
This is beginning to sound like a television commercial. My dog's bigger than your dog, he said.
So what is your baggage? You don't have an ex-husband who's a horse's butt or an obstinate grown child.
I don't want to discuss it tonight. What's the decision your friend can help you with?
Actually, I've already made it. But I guess I just want you to be in agreement with me, I said. He looked away from me.
What is it?
I'm not going back to school this fall. We're not nearly through in the house, and I really like the remodeling business. It's like resuscitating an old lady who's almost dead and finding she's got a lot of years left in her. Hey, did I tell you I found an old lamp up in the attic that I plan to use in my bedroom? It's got this strange shade, maple leaves around the edge, and it's kind of like a leaded Tiffany lamp, but it's not. He turned back to me with a big smile on his face.
I remember that lamp. It used to sit on a table in the living room when I was a little boy, back before Gert married Lonnie. I was afraid you were going to say that you'd decided to give Drew another chance after all.
Drew has had all the chances he's getting. He can fix his own problems from now on, I said.
I'm glad, Trudy. I didn't want you to go back to him. I like us.
Us?
Yes. I like us. Right where we are, in this moment in time. I hope, if it has to change, it goes forward, not backward, he said. Now, about that lamp?
You changed the subject, Billy Lee. Why?
Because I'm not sure I want to hear what you've got to say about our going forward.
I think I'd like that.
Good. Now let's talk about the lamp.
I smiled. That was enough for tonight for both of us. I'd love to have another one just like it, but there was only one in the attic. When I buy a computer, I'll do some research and see if I can find another. But I bet it's the lone survivor of an era. He rolled his neck to get the kinks out.
Can you be ready by 7:30 in the morning?
I can be ready in 10 minutes if you want to go tonight. I got one of his crooked grins and thought again of Harrison Ford.
7:30 in the morning is early enough. And I think you made the right decisions about work and Drew.
The next morning, Billy Lee brought over a duffel bag, and I filled it very carefully, carrying only the barest of necessities to get me through the next 2 days. I carried it to the kitchen and handed it to Billy Lee. The Harley was parked in the backyard, so we went out the kitchen door. The floor man arrived as we were leaving, and Billy Lee told him to lock up when he left. Billy Lee shoved my duffel into one of the empty saddlebags on the cycle and helped me settle a brand new helmet on my head. He brought out a tube of sunscreen from his pocket and said, "The wind and sun will blister your fair skin. Put on your overshirt. It'll protect your arms from the heat as well as bugs. I'll put this on your face and neck, and you can use it like hand lotion to protect your hands."
His touch was as light as butterfly wings. I didn't know which I'd rather do, ride with the wind or just stand there in the yard and let him cover my neck and face with sunblock all day. He finished and climbed onto the cycle, then patted the back seat, and I carefully hopped up behind him. Suddenly, I was embarrassed. What did I do with my hands? Billy Lee solved that crisis when he reached around behind him and grabbed both my arms, wrapped them firmly around his midsection, and revved up the engine. By the time he got to Main Street and turned right, I was in love with the cycle. Too bad Drew hadn't offered me a Harley. I might be moving my clothes back into my old bedroom. Yeah, right, I thought. Not even a Harley was that good. Ravia, what was left of Russet, Mansville, and Dixon blew past at 70 miles an hour. I was definitely resigning when we got back to Tishomingo. There was no way I was ever going to be stuck in a classroom if Billy Lee wanted to take a 2-day jaunt on a motorcycle and I had the opportunity to go with him. Chapter 14. Billy Lee took us out 12th Street in Ardmore, past the shops that held absolutely no appeal to me that day. I was a motorcycle mama. I had all I needed in the duffel bag, and the world was mine. I didn't need to shop for a single thing that day. I glanced at the Santa Fe Steakhouse while we were stopped at the red light, but once the light turned green, even food took second place to the wind in my face and the freedom. He stopped at McDonald's on the far side of the I-35 overpass, removed his helmet, and helped me do the same.
"Thought you might be ready for breakfast," he said.
I fluffed up my hair with my fingertips. "Tell me the truth. Does it look all right?"
"You always look beautiful."
"Billy Lee Tucker, we promised to be honest with each other."
"Trudy Matthews, I am, and someday you are going to believe me."
"Someday I might listen to you, but believing you is another issue. I'm starving for good old greasy food. Let's go." I looped my arm through his. Instinctively, he laced his fingers in mine. We must have looked like a real couple, walking across the lot and into the restaurant. I liked the idea. For the most part, the breakfast crowd had cleared out, so we got our bacon, egg, and cheese biscuits, hash browns, orange juice, coffee, and 2 apple pies, quickly.
"So what do you think of the ride so far?"
he asked as we ate. "It's freedom in a soup bowl."
"Never heard of a Harley ride put just like that."
"Let's not stop in Texas. Let's keep on going until we hit the Pacific Ocean, then turn around and head for the Atlantic," I teased. But if he'd agreed, I wouldn't have looked back one time.
"Maybe someday we'll do that. But we've got a house to get in order by Christmas. Won't have the furniture or the kitchen done by then. But we'll get the dining and living rooms finished so you can entertain if you want."
"And who would I invite to a Christmas party?" He looked at me strangely, and my heart seized into a knot. "I'm not inviting you to holiday meals. You don't need an invitation. You are welcome anytime, and you should know it."
"Like you should know you're pretty."
"That's a different story."
"Are you being nice?"
he asked. "No, I am not," I answered.
"By then, this will all be blown over, and they'll all want to come around to see what you've done with the old, ugly house. And you will have earned the right to gloat, Trudy."
"Who are they all?" He sipped his coffee.
"Marty and Betsy and their families. Your mother, if she's having a good day. Maybe Lessie. You'll be surprised.
I shrugged. I would be surprised if anyone comes other than you and me. Getting the dining room ready will be our goal. Did you and Gert have Christmas dinner together? He nodded. Sitting there dipping apple pie into the last of the coffee in my cup, I began to look forward to the holidays. I'd bring Mama home no matter what kind of day she was having, and I'd definitely invite Lessie. I'd call Crystal, and if she didn't want to spend the day with me, I'd try not to whine. I would even be nice and call Marty and Betsy. Billy Lee and I would make a turkey and dressing and all the trimmings.
What are you thinking about? You look like you're somewhere far away,
he said. I was planning our menu for Christmas. You think we should get a turkey or a ham?
Gert always had turkey, the smallest one she could buy.
Buy? You mean she didn't go out to some farm and select a live bird?
Not in the past 20 years.
The giggle started.
What's so funny?
His face was as serious as it had been the day of Gert's funeral when we were in the sanctuary. I finally got my laughter under control, with only a slight case of hiccups. Gert made me feel like I wasn't a real cook because I didn't buy a live bird and dress it for the holidays. She fussed at me every year, saying that a good wife wouldn't mess with one of those frozen turkeys.
You three girls never knew when she was fussing and when she was teasing. Her sense of humor was very dry,
he said. Then we'll get a turkey, and you can make that potato salad you brought to the church social.
And the pecan pies. I'm good at making them. Secret is in
chopping the pecans very fine so they make a crusty top. I finished the sentence for him.
That's right. And in never substituting waffle syrup for Karo.
I nodded slowly. Learned that lesson the hard way, too. I'm surprised Gert let you do any cooking. In her generation, men stayed out of the kitchen.
It took some doing, and more than a couple of years to convince her.
I'd bet it did.
But she never let me fix the turkey. I offered to deep fry it or smoke it, but she wouldn't have any part of that.
You've got that big a smoker? I asked.
Big enough to do 2 turkeys and a ham all at once,
he answered. Then we're having smoked turkey. But if you make the potato salad, pecan pies, and do the turkey, what's left for me to take care of? I asked.
I can't make hot rolls. When I do, they're heavy enough to be considered a concealed weapon if I put one in my pocket, he said.
How about pumpkin pie?
Crust is always soggy.
I laughed. Billy Lee Tucker, are you just saying that to make me feel important?
I'll make hot rolls and a pumpkin pie, and you can be the judge. I'm being honest, he said.
Okay, I'll believe you. Are we ready to go again?
You might want to visit the ladies' room before we take off. The ride is more than an hour, and the last 45 minutes, there's only one convenience store with a bathroom.
I'd hated ladies' rooms since Gert's funeral. The scenario from that fiasco did an instant replay any time I shut a stall door. Any moment, I expected Marty and Betsy to barrel into the room, spouting off about Billy Lee, and I'd find out he wasn't the person I thought either. But nothing happened in the McDonald's ladies' room that day. Billy Lee was already on the cycle by the time I got outside. He handed me the helmet, which I jerked onto my head without any help. I threw a leg over the back seat and wrapped my arms around his waist. We stopped on the Talvias Bridge across the Red River separating Oklahoma and Texas. The Red was down slightly, with sandbars on both sides of a shallow, winding river. Widespread debris gave firm testimony that, in the rainy spring, it had pushed its way over the banks. Green trees lined both sides. And on the Texas side, Angus cattle and one lonesome-looking donkey dotted the pasture. Billy Lee propped his elbows on the edge of the concrete bridge.
Know why there's a donkey over there?
Because he's cute?
No, donkeys protect the young calves. They can't abide bobcats or coyotes. They'll kick and bite them until they're dead.
Are you pulling my leg? I asked.
It's the truth. I got an email last week about it. If I had cattle, I'd put a donkey in every pasture.
Imagine that, I murmured. How could anyone think he was an oddball? It must have been a good day for cycle riding, because three more cycles stopped on the bridge. The riders meandered across the two lanes and asked Billy Lee how the roads were on up ahead. They were on their way to Turner Falls in Davis for the night, and then they'd return to Dallas the next day.
Looks like there's construction on 35, but you'll be taking the back roads anyway, won't you?
He answered.
We get all the traffic we want at home, so we stay off the big highways,
one man said.
Where y'all going? Down to Nakona for a couple or 3 days. Anything going on that way?
Billy Lee asked.
Traffic is bad. We passed two pickup trucks.
The man laughed at his own joke and slapped his wife on the back. She laughed with him. The men went to the other side of the bridge to see how things looked to the east. The ladies gathered around me. So y'all going to Nakona? There ain't much shopping in that little town. Got a good western wear store, and a couple of specialty gift stores, and an antique store, and that's about it. But then, traveling the way we do, there ain't any extra room to take it home anyway. Sometimes I think this man of mine started this way of travel just so I couldn't shop. But don't you love it? I asked. She whispered into my ear, it's the best thing since microwave ovens. I just have to give him a hard time now and then. I get so excited every time he plans a trip. You'd think I was a little kid. I can believe it. This is my first time to ride, I whispered back. That's not your husband? Y'all look like you've been riding together for years, she said. No, we're just very, very good friends. Then, honey, you better wake up and smell the bacon frying. It's serious when a feller shares his bike with a woman. Really? You'll have a ring on your finger by this time next year, or I'll give you my bike, she said. I might come looking for it. I smiled. You won't have to. I'll park it in your front yard. Where do you live? She asked. Broadway Street, Tishomingo, Oklahoma. I know that town. Love the ride up through the country to get there. I'll be looking for that bike. You won't ever see it, honey, one of the other women said. She's that good. I really am. Trust me. She nodded toward Billy Lee and the others. We mounted up and rode off, all three of the other couples waving at us. Those motorcycle folk were a friendly lot, and the mamas riding on the backs weren't a bit skinnier than me. If I had their names and addresses, I'd definitely send them an invitation to our Christmas dinner. After we crossed the bridge, we came to a T in the road. A bullet-pocked sign said if we turned right, we'd travel 21 miles to Nakona. Billy Lee turned that way, and the ride took us through gently rolling hills. At times I could see the river over to the right, but most of the time the view was of Angus cows, oil wells, and those big round bales of hay. We came up to another T in the road, and the signs pointed to the right to Spanish Fort and to the left for Nakona. I figured we couldn't be far from the motel at that point, and wondered what on earth Billy Lee had planned, since Nakona didn't have much shopping. I was expecting to drive right into a small town somewhat like Jefferson, but he took a gravel road to the left and slowed down considerably. 10 minutes later, he pulled into the driveway of a log cabin set on the edge of a big lake. He got off the cycle, removed his helmet, and held out a hand to help me. We're here? Look at those ducks! And that boat, I said breathlessly. The view was spectacular. Water, sky, and grass, all in Crayola colors. Who lives here?
I do. It's my place, Trudy. We've worked so hard these past several weeks, and we had such a good time in Jefferson together. I thought maybe you'd like a few days of rest, and maybe we could do some fishing.
This is almost as wonderful as the surprise in Jefferson. Can I go fishing with you?
Of course, he grinned.
And whose boat is that? Can we rent it and put around the lake in it? Do you really own this place? Let's go inside and take a look at it. You amaze me, Billy Lee. You've got more sides than a diamond ring.
And you've got more questions than a 2-year-old.
You love it. You know you do, I teased.
Okay, I admit it. I do love it when you're all happy and ask a million questions. The place really is mine. I bought it 10 years ago. Got to coming down here to Nakona on my bike because the scenery is nice and the traffic is light. One morning I was reading a newspaper, saw a picture of this cabin, and called the realtor. The boat is mine, too. And yes, you can go fishing with me. And yes, we can take it around the lake after supper tonight.
I clapped my hands. Would you look at that water? It looks like a sheet of glass, it's so still. Can we come here often? What does it look like in the winter? Do you have a fireplace in there? I think I see a chimney. Without answering any questions, he opened the back door. The kitchen, living room, and dining room all ran together to form a combination great room with natural log walls. A big, soft, burgundy leather sofa took up the west wall, a galley kitchen the east one, with a table for two shoved up against a glass wall broken only by sliding glass doors that led out onto a deck overlooking the lake. I was already planning to sit in one of those Adirondack chairs out there to watch the sunrise. Plush rugs were scattered haphazardly on oak hardwood floors, with the biggest one in front of the fireplace. No wonder Billy Lee had fallen in love with the cabin. It was a perfect hideaway.
Bedroom is in here. It's small, but it's got its own bathroom, he said.
I stopped at the door and looked inside. A patchwork quilt covered the queen-size bed, and another neatly folded quilt was stretched across the foot of the mattress. A rocking chair, placed under the window to catch the setting sun, had green corduroy cushions tied on the back and seat. A small chest of drawers held a lamp and scented candle. The bathroom offered a shower above a tub and a vanity with a mirror. Guilt washed over me. Billy Lee, you take this room, and I'll sleep on the sofa. I could even sleep on the deck in one of those oversized chairs. He shook his head.
No, you will not. No arguing. I'll win, and I'm not just being nice either. We've got time to take the boat out and do some fishing. Might catch supper. Let's go.
And thank you. I remembered my manners at the last minute. It seemed I had said those words to Billy Lee more in one summer than I'd ever said them to anyone in my whole life.
No thanks necessary.
Riding on a Harley took second place to relaxing on the pontoon boat and watching a red fishing bobble dance on the still waters. Billy Lee insisted on smearing more sunblock on my arms when I took off the overshirt. Then he concentrated on fishing. I hadn't cast a line into the water in more than 25 years. Daddy used to take me along once in a while, back before I found out dating was more fun than spending the day out on Lake Texoma with a fishing pole. I love your idea of rest and relaxation, I said.
Do you like catfish?
He asked. Love it.
I was hoping you'd say that, because here comes supper.
He pulled back on the line and brought in a nice big catch. How'd you know?
He's been teasing my line for several minutes. It was about time for him to take the bait.
After he'd snagged a smaller one, he put his rod and reel away. Do we have to go? I almost whined. He put the fish on ice in a blue cooler and opened the lid on a red one.
No, I put up the equipment because we have enough for supper and some left for the freezer. I'm going to read for a while. You catch anything, we'll do a catch and release. Hungry?
Sushi? I snarled my nose.
No, sandwiches and cokes.
Did you think of everything?
Hopefully. Want something to read?
Got a John Grisham? I asked.
Oh, you like mystery, do you? How about J.A. Jantz?
I removed the plastic wrap from the sandwich he handed me and took a bite. I do like mystery, and J.A. Jantz is a favorite. He opened a tote bag and handed me a book.
Okay, then you can have this one, and I'll read the new James Lee Burke.
Who is James Lee Burke?
Another good author. He can describe Louisiana so well. I can hear the nutria screaming and smell the swamp water. You'll have to read one of his books. You'll be hooked if you like mystery and good writing.
We finished our sandwiches and spent 3 hours reading in comfortable silence. The sun had reached its high point and started falling toward the western sky when Billy Lee fired up the motor and steered us back toward the pier beside his cabin. He cleaned the fish and I made baked beans and cabbage slaw. While he fried the fish, I added chopped onions, baking powder, egg, milk, and a little salt to the leftover cornmeal and made hush puppies.
Been a while since I've had fresh catfish. Smells good, doesn't it?
He said. I can't remember the last time I ate fish fixed at home. Daddy liked to fish, and we had it often, but he's been gone 10 years.
Did he put cayenne pepper in the cornmeal?
Mama did. Said it needed a little fire.
I agree, he said.
We ate out on the deck. The zapping noise of the bug killer competed with Mother Nature's night sounds, but there were no mosquitoes to ruin supper. When we finished, he carried the paper plates inside to the trash can and pulled a couple of cold Cokes from the refrigerator.
Think I'll read a little more before bedtime, unless you want to do something else.
Actually, I left Sheriff Joanna in a bind, I said. To anyone else, it would have been a boring evening. To me, it was the stuff cotton candy and dreams are made from. No tension, no boredom, not even a trip to the refrigerator to find something to eat just to have something to occupy the long hours. My tummy was full. I had a good book to keep me entertained, and Billy Lee was right there. Life was truly good. Billy Lee took a shower at about 10 o'clock and came out of the bedroom wearing knit pajama bottoms and a gauze undershirt. He wasn't as scrawny as he looked in his overalls. His arms and abs were rock hard. I had to exercise a good measure of self-control to keep from reaching out and touching the fine brown hair on his chest to see if it was as soft as it looked. My voice was a little hoarse when I said, "Good night, Billy Lee." "You sure you don't want me to take the couch?"
"Now you're being nice," he said.
"Yes, I was, and I apologize. I really do want that bed, and I'm looking forward to a long shower." He tossed a couple of cushions onto the floor and pulled a bed out of the sofa. He opened a closet door beside the fireplace and found 2 pillows.
"See, it's a real bed, and I'll be just fine."
"Then sleep tight. Any time we need to be up and around?"
"When you wake up, sleep as long as you like. When we start in on that dining room and living room, we'll be working from sun up till sundown. Gert kept more junk in those 2 rooms than any of the others."
I lingered. She did, didn't she? But then that was what folks saw when they came inside the house. She wanted them to notice all her collectibles.
Collectibles? That's not a collection. It's rejects from 40 years of yard sales.
I almost ducked and ran for cover. Surely lightning would come crashing out of the sky. Billy Lee had just said something derogatory about Gert, and that was even more surprising than the motorcycle mama's prophecy. "Amen," I hustled on into the bedroom. I wasn't really sure how accurate lightning bolts were. Keeping a wall between me and Billy Lee might just save my life. Chapter 15. I fought back tears when we left the lake. We'd slept late. We'd eaten when we wanted. We'd fished. We'd trolled around the whole lake one day and fed the fish and turtles part of our sandwiches. "I don't want to leave," I whispered as we got onto the Harley.
"I never do. But it wouldn't be nearly as much fun if we had it every day," he said.
"Bet me."
"We can come back any time you want to, Trudy."
Is that a promise?
It is. But if you had all the candy bars you wanted every day, you'd get tired of them.
You don't know me very well. I managed to smile, even though my chin was almost quivering. Next time we need to leave for the floor man, will you bring me back here? He nodded, and I believed him. Billy Lee had never lied to me. Riding on the back of a cycle for more than 2 hours gave me lots of time for thinking. If we hadn't put so many long hours and elbow grease into redoing the top floor, I might have gathered up some 20-year-old newspapers from a corner, soaked them in 10-year-old gasoline from the garage, and set fire to the whole house. The only thing that saved the place was the furniture Billy Lee had built. That and the brand spanking new big, deep jacuzzi the plumbers had installed in the bathroom. I couldn't very well torch something that expensive. But the thought of having to do the whole downstairs was enough to make me tell Billy Lee to turn the bike around and take me back to the lake house, where I intended to live permanently. It was dusk when we got home, and Billy Lee didn't even come inside. He said he'd see me the next morning, bright and early, and went on home. I was tickled with the new shiny floors, but all that junk in the living room and dining room hadn't mysteriously disappeared while we were gone. I wandered through the downstairs, which was almost a perfect square. The foyer and living room extended across the entire front, taking up half the downstairs. Whoever had designed the place hadn't been thinking of rowdy children who could slide down the banister into the living room and run circles from the living room through the dining room into the kitchen and back to the living room. Visions of the lake house danced in my head, and it became the light at the end of the tunnel. The next morning we had breakfast together, and Billy Lee went straight up to my new office, where he would be assembling the desk and cabinets. I would rather have been helping him than boxing up all the junk.
"Hey, when you get all that done, you can come up here and keep me company," he yelled down the stairs.
"You're going to die a lonely old man," I yelled back. "I'll have gray hair before this is done. I'm not totally sure that doing this job won't cause Alzheimer's. Going through Grandmother Matthew's old stuff is probably what snatched my mother's memory. You've got time to construct a new home, complete with 3 stories and a basement and attic in the time it'll take me to empty the dining room." He went back into the office.
"Then when I get done, I'll help you."
With one last little whimper, I steeled myself and took a step into the room. Flattened cardboard boxes were stacked on the table, along with duct tape, wide packing tape, and a magic marker. I popped a box into a square, taped the bottom, and started on the bookcase along the back wall. In the beginning, the shelves had been installed to hold fancy dishes and shiny silver platters. Gert had long since packed away anything of worth, and the shelves were now covered with junk. I wished Gert would appear like a hologram right beside me. First, I'd ask her what gave her the right to buy a turkey from the store when she knew how to wring a neck and pluck feathers. And then I'd make her tell me what was worth keeping and what was junk. The doorbell rang before I had time to put a single item into the first box. I didn't care if it was Marty or Betsy, just so long as I could procrastinate a few more minutes. I opened the door to find a smartly dressed woman and man on my porch, each with a briefcase. It was definitely not my day. It didn't matter if they were selling encyclopedias or religion. I wasn't interested.
"Trudy Matthews?"
The man had a high-pitched voice with a lisp. Maybe they'd been sent straight from heaven to punish me for thinking about burning down the house. How else would they know my name? Or maybe Crystal had really declared me insane, and the briefcases were filled with drugs to sedate me until they could get a straitjacket onto me.
"Why do you want Trudy?" "Mr. Tucker called last night and made arrangements for us to come by. We are antique dealers from Ada," and I swung the door open and motioned them inside.
"Please come right in. I'm about to clean out the dining room."
"Hey, Trudy, I forgot to tell you I called an antiques dealer to... Guess it doesn't matter now,
Billy Lee shouted from the top of the stairs. I shook a finger at him. I'd deal with him later. He was full of surprises, and I truly loved most of them. But someday, he was going to forget to tell me something that would cause a heart attack. The woman made introductions as they followed me. I'm Linda, and this is my husband, Art. Is it all right if we set up shop on the end of this table? They were the same height and age, somewhere around 60, and all business. He gasped at the dining room table. It's oak, late 1800s. Are you selling it? No, we're keeping it, I said. Please let us be the first to bid on it if you decide to sell. Now, what would you like us to catalog and make an offer on? Oh, Art, look at these precious salt and pepper shakers, and they're clearly marked on the bottom. I can see a lot of items we'd be interested in purchasing. So let me explain our rates. We will pay 60% of book value on any antique. We will show you the item in the catalog so you'll know we are not cheating you. Heck, I didn't care what they paid me. Anything was better than the nothing I'd get when I took it all to the Goodwill store in Durant. Just keep a list and I'll look at it when you're finished. What you don't want, please, for the honor of getting to go through this stuff, we'll gladly box what we don't want so you can store it. Art popped open a briefcase, brought out several books, a yellow legal pad, and a calculator, plus a hardbound business checkbook. We all took a break at lunchtime. They asked about a restaurant, and I sent them out to the Western Inn for the lunch buffet. Billy Lee stopped work, and we made sandwiches in the kitchen.
So were they finding anything good?
He asked, as I looked over the paper where they'd listed what they had found so far. About $10,000 worth so far. That's $6,000 to us. That last word came out so naturally, it scared me.
And is it making a dent in the junk?
Not nearly enough. Could we take what's left to the Goodwill down in Durant?
Anytime you want, we can load it up in the van and run it down there. Got any more of that coconut cream pie?
I brought a frozen pie out of the refrigerator, cut off two slabs, and put them on paper plates. He reached for his.
Gert used to tell me she'd had a fortune in this house right under Lonnie's nose. Guess she did know the difference between good antiques and pure junk. I thought she meant it was hidden in the attic or the basement, but then that wouldn't have been right under his nose, would it?
What else did she tell you? I asked.
That when she was dead, she hoped.
He paused.
What?
I pressured.
Okay, I'll fess up. I knew she was leaving it all to you.
And?
She said she hoped you went through things really slowly and didn't toss out anything valuable.
I can see why. But was she talking about just the stuff in this house? He shrugged.
Don't know. She'd say something like that and then tell me what happened back when she and Eula were little girls or some other piece of her history. There at the end, her mind flitted from past to present and back again during the course of one supper.
He ate, and I pondered, finally putting my untouched pie back into the carton. What on earth could she have meant? The jewelry? Maybe she was afraid I'd toss everything without taking time to really look at it. I guess she meant that jewelry.
You might want to put it into the safe.
Thinking he meant a safe deposit box at the bank, I asked, and where's the key to that?
Don't need a key. It's a combination lock. And I know the combination.
I must have looked puzzled.
Come on, I'll show you. It's in the basement, and no one but me even knows it's there. She had it installed after Lonnie died. I should have told you about it, but there's been so much to do, and...
And I trust you, Billy Lee. I finished the sentence. He opened a door down to the basement and pulled a penny chain cord. Light shined down a very narrow staircase. I hate cellars and basements and caves and anything underground. Let the tornado whistle blow, and I'll ignore it. I'd rather take my chances swirling through the air with all the other debris than spend an hour in a musty-smelling cellar. He moved an old Victrola to one side and squatted down to slide a metal suitcase away, and right there, on ground level, was the door of a safe.
There we go. Combination is 7 right, 13 left, 11 right.
Every day brought a brand new surprise. The inside of the safe was about 18 inches square and filled with papers, money, and more jewelry in little black velvet drawstring bags. I leafed through the papers and jewelry before putting it all back. I don't have time to deal with this right now. I've got to get the upstairs cleaned out first. One thing at a time. We'll go through the rest of it later and put that jewelry down here, I said. Billy Lee shut the safe, twirled the dial, and moved the camouflage back over it.
Ain't inheriting fun?
I could write a book.
Why don't you?
Are you serious?
Sure. You are so smart. You could write a book. You're funny, too. Tell it just like you see it.
Only, he waggled his eyebrows.
Change the names to protect the guilty?
It began with a smile, which became a giggle, and then a full-fledged belly laugh I couldn't control. It was so infectious, Billy Lee caught it, and there we sat, like two first graders laughing our fool heads off, when the doorbell rang. We still wore stupid grins when we opened the front door to find Linda and Art ready for the afternoon's work. On my way upstairs to work beside Billy Lee, an idea popped into my mind, like a light bulb in a bubble above a cartoon character's head. I could use the money we'd made today to help underprivileged girls get an education. I could create a Gertrude Martin Scholarship to be given to the Tishomingo High School female senior who needed help to pay for college. Billy Lee and I could be on the committee to decide who would get the scholarship. By supper time, Art and Linda had a van loaded top to bottom, and I had enough boxes to warrant a run to the Durant Goodwill store, but that would have to wait. The store would be closed by the time we could drive there that evening. Billy Lee fired up the hibachi out on the back porch. I topped cut-up potatoes, onions, and fresh green beans with pats of butter, salt, and pepper, and wrapped it all in foil to grill 30 minutes before he put on the steaks. I sat in the swing and watched him cook.
"What are you going to do with the money you made today?" Billy Lee asked.
"I'm thinking about a Gertrude Martin scholarship for a high school senior girl."
"That's a good idea," he said.
"What did you think I'd do with it?"
"Pay for divorces for women who have cheating husbands. Or else set up scholarships to train them for jobs so they could support themselves."
"Hadn't thought of that, but it's a good idea. I like it better than a scholarship for a younger person. What makes you so smart? And while we're at it, you have got to start telling me stuff." He looked me right in the eye.
"I do tell you stuff.
You didn't tell me about Linda and Art."
"I forgot. I was thinking about the office and hoping you wouldn't be disappointed, and I forgot."
"Billy Lee, I love every single thing you've done in the house. It's as if you read my mind and produce what I want even before I know what I want."
"Then what's the problem?"
"The problem is, I'd been dreading going through all that junk today. If it hadn't been for all the gorgeous furniture you'd built, I might have torched the place just to keep from sorting and packing up all that stuff." He chuckled, and the tension disappeared.
"You've really got to start writing some of this down, Trudy. You'd be good at it."
"I couldn't keep a train of thought long enough to write a whole book. Besides, we've got too much work to do for that right now. Are those steaks ready? I'm starving." I changed the subject. Sometimes Billy Lee's confidence in me was just plumb scary. Chapter 16. By Thanksgiving, we had the dining room finished and the living room semi-done. The woodwork had been stripped and the walls painted, but we'd decided to wait until after the holiday for the floor man. Mama and Lessie were the only guests. but we ate in the dining room on Granny Molly's good china. Mama was off in La La Land and thought I was the waitress and Billy Lee was a movie star. She fluttered her eyelashes at him after he said grace and carved the turkey. I swear I saw you play on that episode of The Golden Girls. Don't mind her. Just be glad she's not yelling and upset, Leslie whispered. This is new territory for me. I didn't know Mama could flirt, I said out of the side of my mouth. You two should stop telling secrets. It's bad manners to whisper like that. You will upset Billy Bob and me. It's Billy Lee, Mama, I corrected her gently. I know Billy Bob Thornton when I see him. It'll hurt his feelings if you call him Billy Lee. He's been my favorite movie star for a long time, so don't try to play games with me. Now get us some more tea. My glass is almost empty, and his is only half full. Yes, ma'am, I said. Billy Lee followed me